Okay, now what we're going to do is change subjects pretty emphatically and look at what's going on in Qatar. And I am about to introduce you to Dr. Toby Matheson, who is a senior research fellow in the international relations of the Middle East at St. Anthony's College at the University of Oxford, and to welcome back Dr. Kudira Pethiagoda, who's a foreign policy analyst and specialist in Middle East and Asia. Now, how to get into the story? Well, first of all, I'd wonder, Toby, whether you'd be kind enough to tell us the nature of the crisis. How is it manifesting itself?
Well, it has manifested itself in basically a media row breaking out between Qatar on the one hand and the UAE and Saudi Arabia and some other countries on the other. And it has then escalated towards these countries breaking diplomatic relations with Qatar, closing airspace, closing land borders, and so on and so forth. But it's really just the latest instance of a long-standing kind of disagreement that at times has remained under the surface between Qatar and some of its neighbours.
So what does the region regard as Qatar's sins of commission?
Well, it's important to say that not everyone in the region is against Qatar. This is basically Saudi Arabia and its allies that have now singled out Qatar. And one of the things they're unhappy with is that Qatar has maintained diplomatic relations with Iran while the others have broken them, and that Qatar maintains relationships with the Muslim Brotherhood in the region. And Qatar is really a very complicated case. Qatar has backed so many different political movements, groups in the region over the last few decades that it's very difficult to just point towards one ideology or one thing. For example, one of the things that the Saudis kind of want from Qatar is the closing of all the kind of media that's based in Qatar. So Al Jazeera and some newspapers that Qatar funds and some think tanks. And these are often staffed, in fact, by Arab nationalists, kind of intellectuals, and have supported, the Palestinian movement, Hezbollah in Lebanon, but just have kind of broadly gone against kind of the Western-led kind of hegemonic project in the Middle East. So it's really a very complicated and multifaceted row.
Kudira, does Al Jazeera play a role in this? Is that another reason for regional antagonism?
Yes, well, Al Jazeera is listed as one of the points that Saudi Arabia has requested some changes on from Qatar if the crisis was to de-escalate. So they've already closed Al Jazeera offices in Saudi Arabia. They claim that Al Jazeera promotes terrorism plots and a range of other allegations. And they've made it one of their sort of key conditions that the editorial policies would be changed in Al Jazeera.
It's a really interesting country, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, Qatar's an interesting country, so is Saudi Arabia. I mean, Al Jazeera has been quite important to Qatar in terms of projecting its soft power and its more independent foreign policy. But if you look back, I think another important country that's trying to sanction Qatar alongside Saudi Arabia is Egypt. And Egypt had some serious problems with Al Jazeera following the revolution there and with the arrests of Al Jazeera journalists by the...
One of whom, of course, was the Australian Peter Christie, yeah.
Yes, definitely. And they've also complained, Saudis have complained about Al Jazeera's coverage of the Yemen war. And also, I think another issue that we may get onto later is the relationship between Saudi Arabia and Israel, and Al Jazeera has been a big critic of Israel as well.
Toby, tell us about the huge sum paid to militants in exchange for hostages, including members of the royal family.
Oh, Well, that is an interesting story indeed. Some Qatari royals were taken hostage in Iraq on a hunting trip. But it mainly kind of shows that Qatar was involved as a mediator in so many different conflicts. I mean, it also supported rebel groups in Syria and elsewhere in a very negative way. But it basically meant that Qatar, as it has been trying to mediate in different areas, including in Yemen, in Syria, Iraq, and so on, it had contact with different movements. So these ransom payments went via, you know, different angles to get these hostages released. But just what your colleague said before, so Al Jazeera has been critical of Israel and supporting Palestinian, the movement Hamas. But one of the things that now are officially amongst the allegations against Qatar is that Qatar maintains relations with Israel. So there's also really a lot of double speak in this, you know, singling out of Qatar. I mean, as we know, Saudi Arabia itself has for decades supported different forms of Islam all over the world. It's not as if Qatar is the only country that supports Islamic causes. And in fact, Qatar and Saudi Arabia are the only two countries whose religious ideology actually goes back to Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab, the founder of the Wahhabi movement. So there's also a little bit of jealousy over who owns really the legacy of the Wahhabi movement here.
Qadira, take us to Qatar, if you wouldn't mind, because I know you've spent some time there. Describe it to us as a living, breathing place.
Yeah, well, it's a very distinct place. It's one of the, in terms of GDP per capita, the richest countries in the world. It's a tiny country of 2.2 million people. It's got a significant economy of $166 billion. Its main export is natural gas. But I think what differentiates Qatar from its Gulf neighbours is that it's tried to position itself as having an independent foreign policy that's somewhat similar to, say, being like a Switzerland in the Middle East, for example, where it sees itself as a centre for diplomacy, while Dubai is seen as a commercial hub. Doha has tried to project itself as a place for conferences, for engagement, for negotiation, and it's sort of involved itself in various regional dialogues. And I think that
so it really is a maverick.
To some degree. I mean, it's not been completely sort of separate from the Gulf states, but to some degree it's been a bit more independent, and I think that degree of independence is really what's at contention here with the Saudis.
Okay, this is LNL on RN, and you can listen live or via podcast on your ABC app. And my guests are Qadira Pethiagoda and Toby Matheson. Toby, several reports suggest that Saudi Arabia has been emboldened by once again having an ally in the White House and one who is focused on an anti-Iran agenda.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. I think the Saudi leadership, the king and his son, they're incredibly happy with what's going on in the White House. They have there someone who is really willing to you know, glance over many of the nuances that the Obama administration saw in the region, just seeing good and evil. I mean, in fact, has, you know, Trump in his speech in Riyadh has openly made the connection between ISIS, terrorism, and Iran. He said Iran is really responsible for all of that. Yesterday, after the attacks on, terror attacks in Iran, we saw that the White House said, well, they've had it coming. You know, these Iranian state sponsors of terrorism, look what happens to them if you do such things.
Toby, let me look at another surprise or another paradox, if you like, at the risk of introducing another complication. Qatar is also essential to the US's counterterrorism fight in the region, being home to a very significant American base.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the paradox of it all. I mean, Qatar has been playing all sides in this game, maintaining relationships with everyone, preparing precisely for such a moment where one of its two powerful neighbors, Saudi Arabia or Iran, would move against it one day. And, you know, the U.S., this is the largest U.S. military base in the Gulf, from which many of the operations and wars in the region have been fought. And the U.S. can't really afford to alienate. Qatar has investments all over the world, massive ones, has also been a massive buyer of American and other European weapons. Therefore, well, the U.S. will have to walk a fine line. And we see actually differences in the statements between the White House, State Department and the Pentagon on this issue, whereas the Pentagon is very wary that this might escalate and put, you know, different American allies up against each other.
Kadira, let's look at possible repercussions here. You've said that Saudi machinations could backfire in that Iran could actually increase its influence.
Yeah, so if you look at some of the potential winners out of this, Iran might be one of them, where the Gulf alliance is split and that Iran sees an opportunity to potentially enter through, you know, it's said that it would ship food and medicine to Qatar. Its soft power is somewhat increased in terms of its image by being seen as this sort of friendly country that's coming to the aid of Qatar when the other Gulf states have turned on it. And I think that in that sense, it's put Qatar in a difficult position, but if it turns out the wrong way for the Saudis, it could be quite bad in the sense that if they win, they get, you know, Qatar adheres and it comes back into the fold. But if they don't, it could be, you know, quite disruptive to the GCC. And I just think that in the long term, because the way this has occurred, it was a little bit of a surprise to some in Qatar. And that loss of trust will be difficult to repair in the long term.
Toby, as we've been pointing out, Qatar is no small-time player. We should tell the listener it supplies energy to Russia and to China. What are its political linkages to those powers?
Well, I think, as I said, it maintains, you know, relations with everyone, you know, the relations with the U.S. are much more significant, you know, with this massive military base. I think one thing we haven't mentioned so far, but that is important, is that Qatar has actually a defense pact with Turkey, and Turkey has recently established a military base in Qatar. And the parliament has just now, after this crisis, approved the deployment of 3,000 Turkish soldiers to Qatar, which adds yet another, you know, very significant element to this whole row. So one could envision a possibility, because basically the Saudis and the UAE have given a list of 10 demands that Qatar needs to do in order for this to all end. And the, you know, these demands are so humiliating for Qatar that I don't think it's likely that Qatar will just agree to them in the short term. Therefore, we could envisage a situation whereby Qatar has to turn towards Iran and Turkey and, you know, perhaps, yeah, other larger players to kind of counterbalance against its Gulf neighbors, which, as, you know, our guest has said, would basically, you know, divide the Gulf alliance and have perhaps, you know, dramatic repercussions on other issues in the region, such as Syria, where basically Qatar, Turkey and Iran are on opposite sides of the conflict and have been very viciously fighting each other. I mean, that needs to be said as well.
Well, Toby, that leads us to the long-reaching effect on the Gulf Cooperation Council, which is Saudi-led. Tell us about the Gulf Cooperation Council. It sounds like an oxymoron.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, it is basically, and this basically 3 years ago, you know, these three states already cut diplomatic relations with Qatar. But, you know, just imagine, you know, one EU state closing its borders towards another and breaking diplomatic relations with each other. I mean, the GCC was very much modeled on the EU model. So, you know, increasing integration security, economic and political, and this is really an existential crisis for the GCC.
So, what do you think's likely to play out, Kadira, in the next few months?
Well, I think it can either go, two ways. It can, as I mentioned, Qatar could succumb to the pressure and toe the Saudi line. I think it all depends on how much pressure they're able to put economically. At the moment, gas exports haven't been impacted. The stock market's rebounded, even though the credit rating has been downgraded. And so I think it depends on how much pressure they put. And also, I think whether Qatar sees that in future, to avoid such shocks, whether it would have to diversify. And I think what would happen is an acceleration of what you could call the multipolar Middle East, where you've got Gulf states, which used to rely almost wholly on the US for their security, reaching out and diversifying and putting the eggs in different baskets. And countries like China and India and Russia would have more opportunities to step in and fill those voids. And so if you look at Qatar and its trading partners, Asia is extremely important. And the engagement, which used to be mainly economic, has in recent years become strategic and security related as well. So you might see an acceleration of that kind of thing happening.
Gentlemen, I thank you very much. We've been talking to Dr. Toby Matheson. Toby is Senior Research Fellow in the International Relations of the Middle East at St. Anthony's College at the University of Oxford. And Dr. Kadira Pethiagoda is Foreign Policy Analyst Specialist in Middle East and Asia. And if we're talking about changes of power balances in the Middle East, they're almost as dramatic in Europe. And in just a minute, I'll be talking to Andreas Kluth and to Matt Steinglass.